Well, hello everybody and welcome back to the Applied Human Design podcast. My name is Heather and I will be your host today. Today we're going to do a pretty fun episode, I would say, if I may say so myself, because we're going to be talking about what even is like the theme. We're going to be talking about like kind of some of the most common things or themes or just like interesting things that I've learned and seen and experienced via doing past life readings. So if you are also interested in history, and also just the way that maybe our experiences, traumas, memories, soul's journey, etc., through multiple lifetimes can impact the way that we live our lives now, like in this life, I think you'll find this episode really, really interesting. So I'm so sorry, but because I had, a bunch of hospital and doctor's appointments again this week, I'm not at home. I'm in the city, so I don't have my microphone. But you know what? That's just life. And yeah, I think that's, oh, and then also because I'm still a little bit sick, hopefully my voice is okay, and hopefully I won't have to pause to have like coughing fits anytime through this. Yes, I've not been well. Like I'm okay, but yeah, just over it, ready to feel myself again. But anyway, you know, that's life. So before we get into like the juice of the episode, since we're doing fortnightly episodes now, and it's kind of like, I don't know, I feel like there's actually kind of things to catch you up on in between moments again. I really did feel like when I was doing weekly, it was like I'd record and then next thing you know, I was recording again. I was like, well, there's literally nothing to talk about. Nothing has happened, whatever. So we'll just have like a little catch up. Like here's just some things I've been enjoying lately, thinking about lately, doing lately, etc. So the first thing that I've been enjoying lately, and you know, if you're at all familiar with me, if you've interacted with my emails, Instagram, etc., and I've probably talked about it on here too, you know that I'm currently watching Pretty Little Liars. So I had watched the first 3 seasons, and then I stopped watching about like maybe like a few episodes into season 4. And I just got up, maybe like 10 episodes ago or so, I got up to the episodes that I haven't seen before. So it is very, very exciting. This show is so good. It's pure chaos. I'm literally obsessed with the fashion, even though they all dress so ridiculously. One of my dreams, goals, intentions is to throw a like Pretty Little Liars themed dress up party. But basically I'm going to have 6 different costume changes because I want to dress up. Like every time I'm thrifting, I'm like, oh my God, that's so Aria, or like, that's so Hannah, or that's so Mona. So I want to dress up as like Allison, Aria, Spencer, Emily, and then also Mona. And I'll just, you know, go back and forth and like costume change throughout the evening. So there's that. And it's just been really nice because I've been watching it with my sister. Like we are both at home at the moment after, you know, we've both done huge trips, huge travels, and we're in the same place and we're just like working and doing our relative jobs. But also just enjoying some normality, and it's just so nice, you know, it really does feel like childhood sometimes. Like we'll just like hang out in someone's room and watch Pretty Little Liars and drink hot chocolates or whatever it is. So that's been really nice. It's been like quite nostalgic. Another thing that I've been enjoying lately, is making coffee at home. So if you know me, I definitely used to be one of those people that was like, I don't care how much money it saves, like I would rather go out for a coffee and like pay someone else who I know is going to make it well. But I've been making really, really nice coffee lately. It's like I've figured out, or maybe it's just because I spent so long traveling like in Europe and Asia, I sort of got out of the like I sort of got accustomed to coffee that's not as good as like a proper Melbourne barista made coffee. But anyway, so I've been really liking just waking up, and kind of my routine at the moment is like I wake up, stretch, whatever, and then make a coffee and go sit outside and do my daily Italian lesson. So I'm still keeping up my daily studies of Italian, and just like sip my coffee and study Italian. And then because my sister is studying Hebrew at the moment, we'll usually like do our little language lesson together. It's really cute. And yeah, I've been really enjoying it because, you know, again, I love a barista made coffee and I love like the act of actually going to get a coffee, but it was sort of like, it had obviously lost its specialness, especially now that I'm not traveling. It's like, you know, when I was traveling, it was a nice little ritual to have in like every morning, no matter where I was in the world, I'd go get a coffee, sit down, like check my emails, all that stuff. But now I'm like, okay, I wanted to feel like a treat again now that I'm at home. And so if I'm making coffee like 5 days a week or 4 days a week or something like that, and then on 2-3 days of the week, I'm actually going to get a coffee, whether with a friend or just like with my book or whatever, I'm going, I'm sitting down, I'm enjoying it. You know, it's actually like a little treat again. So what I've been making at home, it's funny because like I am a coffee snob in that like I love like a nice cup of coffee, but I'm definitely not in the sense that, yes, I love like a sweet treat coffee. My friend Leanne always makes fun of me for having chocolate with coffee, but yeah, so since it's getting close to like that kind of Christmassy time of year, I've been making my peppermint mocha, which is just like a little bit of peppermint, what's it called, like not essential oil, the one you can cook with, like peppermint, what is it called? I'm completely blanking on the word. But so like a couple of drops of that in the bottom and then like your espresso shot. And I don't even have like an espresso machine. I'd love to get one. I feel like that's sort of on a bit of a shopping list since I'm so into the making coffee right now. But I just use, either we use my sister's AeroPress, cause she's like a big camper, can't relate, or like a moka pot. But anyway, so then I pour that in and then, cocoa in oat milk with a little bit of maple syrup, just to, like sweeten it up. And it's so good. And I have it in my Christmas mug or one of the various mugs that are just fun. Anyway, so that's one thing. What else? Oh, studying Italian, which I've sort of already spoken about. Sto ancora studiando l'italiano, or that translates to I'm still studying Italian. And you know, if you want to learn a language, or if you, I don't know, anything like that, it's like, I think you need to, like, well, firstly, just start it. Like, I think in the last episode I spoke about how I'm doing that, so I won't go, like, how I'm actually going about learning it, so I won't go into that. But, like, yeah, you might feel like you're not making any progress. Like, some mornings I wake up, I'm like, oh my god, what have I learned? Like, how to say I want to go for a walk, and, like, it's raining today, blah, blah, blah. But then when I think about it, I'm like, and compare that to how much I knew, like, even a few weeks ago, it's like, I obviously know so much more. So stick with it. And also, it's just, it feels so good. Like, if you just choose a random language and learn it, you know, whatever it is, even if you choose like a completely rogue one that you could speak to one person in your life. Also, if there are any Italian people who listen, or people who speak Italian that listen to this podcast, say hello, say ciao. I want to know that you're there. My sister was like, why don't you set it a goal that you could record one episode completely in Italian one day? I was like, that would be the slowest episode. I'd be like, buongiorno. But we'd get there, you know? Okay. Oh, okay. And then the final thing that I want to talk about in our little pre-chat, something that I was kind of talking about. Okay, I'm going to be so sorry about the coughing. Oh my god, actually deathly. No, I'm not dying. But anyway, yeah, something that I was speaking about on my Instagram stories this morning was, yeah, I've really been trying to avoid the bitterness that obviously is sweeping creators. And like, whether you are someone who creates content for Instagram or you just follow people who do, which I'm guessing you do, Instagram is really getting our goat recently because it's just not showing anyone that follows us our content. Like, it was bad. Like, obviously it'd gotten really bad like a year or so ago, but now it's just dire. It's like actually ridiculous. And you know, it's not just annoying for me making content, but also I don't get to see anything that people who I followed actually create. And then, yeah, like you know, 7 weeks later, their post from 7 weeks ago will pop up. Be like, wow, that would have been really nice to know about that offer or whatever, like when it was actually happening. But apparently that's too much to ask. But anyway, so like I said, even though I'm a little bit bitter, I'm trying not to dwell in the bitterness. You know, I was like, I had a moment in the bitterness. I was like, you know what? Let's get like crafty and solutions based. Like, let's think. And this is like, so if any of you are creators of any kind, and like, if you still enjoy Instagram and all that stuff, like, that's great. And that's just it. It's like, I still do enjoy it. It's just like a little bit fruitless at the moment. because no one's seeing anything. But anyway. But if you are like feeling frustrated by it, let's think about some solutions. And you want to think about solutions, not solutions that will work for everyone else or solutions that have worked for everyone else. You want to think about solutions that will work for you specifically and like the type of content you create and the type of like creator you want to be and what feels most natural, organic, authentic to you, something that you know you'll stick to and that also will work for your audience. And so when I was thinking about this, I was like, well, it's always my like long rambling, ridiculous Instagram stories that are just like me trying to process my thoughts and feelings and emotions. And it's almost like as I'm typing out these long stories, just combined with a selfie, that I come to some sort of realization. And I actually figure out or come into like my own opinion or feelings or beliefs about a certain situation. That's always the content that like I think resonates with the most people and always gets the most interaction, much more so than when I, well, I think like because my podcasting has the same sort of energy, like it's just like rambling, but I don't really get to hear or see feedback about how it touches people just because that's the nature of podcasting. Like I don't get to hear usually, except for when you guys message me, which I'm literally obsessed with, how certain things resonate with you, whatever. But yeah, more so than like my emails or like the content that I'll actually post on my Instagram grid. Cause I feel like there, I feel like I need to be a little bit more professional or a little bit more like polished, you know, but I think people, and it's funny cause it's like, it's something that I always used to say and like still say a lot when I'm talking about like, your self-expression and your creative self-expression is that like people are like starving for authenticity. And so because in my stories, I'm definitely the most just free and chaotic and just myself, you know, I'm just like silly or just like ridiculous, but also serious at the same time when I need to be. That is what is most like cohesive with who I am as a person. Therefore it like resonates with people in the best way. And I was like, well, okay, what are some other alternatives? Like, how can I find other casual creative places where I feel like I can just be myself to like share what I want to share and like have people like actually have the opportunity, the option to read it, interact with it, whatever, because like it's just like my stories are not getting shown to anyone anymore. So yeah, and like obviously a lot of people have been switching to going back to like blogging and emails and things like that. I was like, that's a really good idea. But like I said, I tend to have this, it's like as soon as I open up my emails writer thingy, I turn into this like professional polished person. I feel like I have to make the writing really nice and like, I don't know, make sense and like be cohesive and all of that. Which is great. And like, there's obviously a time for that. But it's also not, I personally feel like it's not the most useful for people. I think people need sometimes chaotic thoughts and chaotic, unstructured thoughts that have that rambling nature to them because it helps us feel like our creative rambling minds are like we're not alone in that. And I'm sure there are many other reasons, whatever. But anyway, so I was like, okay, we need to wrap this up. And get into the content of the episode. But anyway, so I was like, well, why don't I, instead of like writing thoughts that I'd usually like process and put to my Instagram stories, why don't I just like grab out my laptop or grab out the notes app on my phone, quickly scroll it in there, completely unedited, all of that, and then send out like a fortnightly or monthly email to my list. And if you're not on my list and you want to make sure that you'll get these, then it's always at the bottom of my website page. Like, go to my website and you can, like, just chuck your email in at the bottom of the page. But anyway, and send that almost like a little, like, peek inside my journal from the last, like, 2 weeks, month, however long. Like, I guess it will depend week to week, month to month, how many rambling, uncohesive thoughts I feel like I have. And then it can just still have that same unstructured, unpolished, imperfect nature that is so authentic to me. And I think that, again, people need and people relate to. While also just not trying to do that on Instagram, which obviously Instagram has figured out what kind of creators they like. They've decided what kind of content they like. And I was like, obviously one of the other options is always like play the game, you know, play Instagram's game, create the kind of content that they like, speak in the way that they want you to. But I was like, I don't feel like being trained like a dog. Thank you so much. Anyway, Instagram, I'm going to keep doing it my way. But anyway, so there's that. So that's my little, just like little piece of advice to creatives of any kind. If you're feeling frustrated, like obviously take the time to feel frustrated, but also switch into like getting crafty, getting solutions based. What can you do instead? Okay, so let's transition into now talking about some of the most interesting things that I have learned, seen, experienced for myself in this past, like, oh God, how long? I think only like 6 months, 5 or 6 months now of doing past life readings. So if you don't know, I started working with the Akashic Records, and this transitioned into sort of more focusing on, because there are obviously like people work with the Akashic Records in many, many different ways. It's like essentially like, you know, you've heard it described as like a library of everything, all that ever is and all that ever could be kind of thing. The Earth's history, but not just, it's like the universe's history essentially. And so, you know, some people will work with it for like advice or like, you know, spiritual knowledge, spiritual whatever. I tend to be the most interested in like specific souls' journeys, like specific people's histories, and not just like in this lifetime, but across multiple lifetimes. And this is because, well, obviously I'm interested in people and I'm interested in why they're here and where they've been. But then also like, yeah, the various like traumas and experiences they've had that have marked who they are and like are impacting how they live their lives now. I'm also fascinated by karmic relationships, like, or relationships that have a history across multiple lifetimes, and that there are like lessons or experiences that you guys have had together or that we've had together, that like deeply, deeply impact how we experience each other now. You know, like, you know, when you just meet someone new and you're either like, I like you for no reason whatsoever, or I really don't like you for no reason whatsoever. I'm like angry at you for no reason whatsoever, right? Oftentimes that is when there's going to be like a deep soul past life connection there. So anyway, I'm going to talk about some of those things. There's obviously like so much that I could never cover anything. I could never cover everything. But first, before I go into anything, I just want to share like a couple of little precursors. Firstly, while I will sort of make mention of like, oh, I saw this in a client's reading, I'm not going to use any names, except for, or like be specific around like which client was which, except for when it's my own readings, like into my own soul's history and yeah, lifetimes of mine that I've seen, karmic relationships of mine that I've seen. That's the only time I'll say like, okay, this one is mine. Otherwise I'll just be like my client. And there will be like no specifics. So if I'm talking about a client's past life that I've seen, there will be no specifics as to like how what I see or what I saw related to this client's present life or their present relationships now. But like I said, sometimes it's actually wild, the connections. Like I will know, and like, I'm very clear, like, don't tell me anything about this person. Just give me their name. And they'll be like, you've literally just described the exact dynamic that we have in this lifetime too. But it's like, was in another place, which is wild. And it's still, this is the thing, is that like, it still blows my mind every single time it happens. No matter how many times this happens, I'm still like, there's no way this is real. There's no way I'm getting this information. And then this person will confirm everything. I'll be like, okay, cool, let's keep going. But anyway, so there's two precursors. Another precursor is, like I was sort of starting to say, is that everyone experiences the records differently. And also I'm like, my interpretations of what I'm seeing are just based on like what I'm seeing, but also how I know my guides speak to me and like how my intuition, whatever you want to call it, shows me things. So I'm sure I'm like, someone else could see the same sort of thing, but view it from a different perspective. Like when I'm viewing someone else's soul records, I'm seeing history based on their perspective. When I'm viewing it from my perspective, I'm viewing history, but from my perspective. It's like history is as true as like, or what is that saying where it's like, you know, history is told from the eyes of the winners or whatever. But here it's like history is told from the eyes of the person who's like lives I'm viewing, essentially. Oh my god. Okay. Oh, and then the final little caveat that I, or like not caveat, but just like precursor that I had to this is that you, and like, I don't even know fully what my point of view is, but like everyone has a different point of view about what exactly a past life is. You know, some people view it as almost like we all came from this primordial soup, you know, this collective consciousness, if you will. And so when we have flashbacks to past lifetimes, it might not be that like that was our specific soul living it out, but that is part of a collective consciousness of memories, and we just happen to be like, I don't know, specifically sorting that out for the collective in this life. We're specifically reliving, re-experiencing that that pattern for the collective in this lifetime. Other people view it as more like parallel lives, like everything is happening all at once. And then, yeah, some people view it as like one life ends and then the next one starts. I would say my point of view is somewhere like a kind of a mix between the two, in that both are true at the same time. It's like, yes, of course, time is not real. Everything is happening all at once, but also for our like human understanding, to be able to process the information, like I need to be able to say this happened in the past, and this is happening in this lifetime, this is how it's impacting you now, like this has come to an end, then you had a little rest and then you incarnated again, etc, etc, whatever. So no right or wrong, essentially. Okay. So the first place thing that I want to zoom in on, and probably like the, I guess, location or like time period that I'm going to spend the most, attention in today is ancient Egypt. For a couple of reasons. Firstly, this particular period holds a lot of scars, holds a lot of pain, holds a lot of wounding for a lot of us. And I'm assuming that because a lot of like the clients that are coming to see me have wounds that more or less originate or were really, really deeply embedded during this time period, then it's quite likely that a lot of you listening, because, you know, like attracts like and all that, we gravitate towards each other, we do, that you guys also do as well. And then another reason is just basically that I've seen a lot of it lately. This like Egypt seems to be coming up again and again and again. And yeah, it's funny, like I was saying to my client, like we were talking about like one of her Egyptian lifetimes, and I was like, you know what, I keep talking about Egypt for everyone else, and I just had no idea if I was even there. I was like, I haven't ever seen this time period for myself. And so I did a little like self-reading into my own ancient Egyptian past lives, which I'll probably talk about later, just to see what I was up to. And because my client was like, no, I think you were there with us. And yes, I was. Anyway. Okay. Now, the reason that this specific period holds a lot of scars, holds a lot of pain, holds a lot of wounding for people who like work in the healing field or who are called to spiritual practices, who are called to doing altruistic spiritual work, is because of, and like magical work too, like that more like witchy magical world. It's because of the, and like especially when we incarnated into like women's bodies, and or like, yeah, are women in this lifetime. It is because of the like evolution, the experiences throughout ancient Egypt that I will share, right? Now, what I have essentially seen, like, from multiple clients, like, to almost, like, see the same thing over and over, just, again, from different perspectives in different, like, dynastic periods, all of that, that is something that I've really enjoyed, is that, because after every time I see a past life in the records, I always do, like, research afterwards to back up what I've seen. Like, I'm not just, like, being like, oh yeah, you were this person, you were doing this at this time period, and there was this, and you were worshipping this god, and blah blah blah. Like, I'm actually then going into and reading, like, sometimes, like, peer-reviewed historic papers and art history research, archaeology research, etc., to make sure that was even, like, a potential possibility. So one thing that I have become more and more familiar with over, like, doing this for multiple different sessions is, like, the actual timelines of the dynasties, like, which pharaoh ruled when, who was building which pyramid, when various parts of Egypt were, like, ruling, etc. But anyway, so in ancient Egypt, both from, like, pre-dynastic times, so that is just, like, Egypt before we started the first dynasty. We began the first dynasty around 5,000 years ago, so I believe it was about 3,100 BC, okay? So, I don't know, in terms of, like, history, yes, that's a long time ago, but that's not even, like, that long ago. So before that, prior to that, you had, like, what is known as, like, pre-dynastic Egypt. And there is definitely not as much known about that time, which is why it's really interesting. But anyway, so during that period, as the dynasties began, like, from the first dynasty onwards, women, and especially women who were healers or magicians of any kind, and I'm using the word magician as anybody who, like, used magic, used their work, used their will to influence the way that life or anything played out, essentially. These skills, these gifts, in women were increasingly ruled out. This was a time when more and more, the ruler, was seen to be, like, the man. And magic, especially in the hands of women, was seen as a threat to the king, to the monarchy, to the ruling family. They were not allowed to do their work. Again, this is happening over a period of probably about 1,000 years. It's being stamped out. Now, from what I've seen, there were a few different goddesses that were worked with, goddesses and gods that were worked with, by this more magical healer, we'll call it, this archetype, right? Or this this specific power or gift that many people had that was being ruled up, was being rounded up. The energy the goddess most often worked with by these healers, by these magicians, was the mother goddess, the cow goddess that would eventually become Hathor. Now, was she referred to as Hathor? Like, was that her actual name since the beginning? Like, since this specific type of power was first being used? Potentially not, probably not. There's not really a ton of evidence for that. But you do have this cow goddess imagery. So the imagery of, like, literally a woman, or, like, a cow on a woman's body, with these, like, cow horns facing upwards, this symbolism, of mother, of nourishment, of feeding, and giving of nourishment, right, has been found, to definitely be, like, have roots in pre-dynastic Egypt, right? So tracing back to before 3100, there has been a goddess that has these, like, cow horns of some kind, and she eventually morphed into Hathor. And these priestesses of Hathor, this cult of Hathor, however we think about it, from what I've seen, a huge part of that was the embodiment of this gift, this power that was magic, as well as like healing. I'll talk more about how I seen that in a minute. I want to talk about some other deities first. Now, other deities that I've seen heavily worshipped in this, or like by people, by clients who have this like strong magical inclination dating back to ancient Egypt, and had these powers sort of stamped out, were the crocodile god of Upper Egypt, with the name Sobek, the vulture goddess Nekbet. She was a local pre-dynastic goddess also in Upper Egypt. She was originally a patron, so the patron goddess of the town Nekab. And eventually she, this vulture goddess, eventually merged with the cult of Horus, who is, of course, the falcon god. And what's interesting is that when I did my little reading into my own, like, most important lifetime in ancient Egypt for me to know right now, it was Nekab, this vulture goddess that I was worshipping, that I was connected to in like the strongest way. It's like you, when I see in a lifetime, like people having a strong affinity or connection to a specific god or goddess or deity of some kind, it's like, and this is the thing with pantheons where you have like multiple gods and goddesses, you'd probably be worshipping multiple different gods or goddesses, but like just like a town can have a patron, you as a priestess or as a person, like even just like local homeowners, the everyday person would often have, or like a family, right, might have a patron god or goddess. So I'll see this often. For example, like let's say you ran a winery in a past life in ancient Greece, you're going to probably have your family's patron being Dionysus, the god of wine, you know, just as a very basic example, right? And so when you have these strong like patronage links to a specific god or goddess, it is, and like the way that ancients may have seen it, from my understanding, like again, this is just like my interpretation of what I've seen in the records, is that you are receiving, gaining, or embodying some of their powers, right? So for me in this past lifetime, having this patron goddess, again, from my interpretation, being this vulture goddess Nekbet, I would have been like some of the things that I could do, some of my healing capacities or like magical powers, or even like my knowledge, like what I knew would have been gifted to me from Nekbet, from worshipping a specific god, a goddess. And I am so sorry if I'm pronouncing any of these deity names wrong, by the way. you heard my Italian earlier. I am not made to speak beautiful languages that are not English. Okay, another one that I've seen a lot is the cobra goddess Wadjet, who was a goddess in Lower Egypt. So it's funny because like when you actually look at a map of Egypt, is that Lower Egypt is actually like, to me, what I would consider the north, and Upper Egypt is like kind of like traveling along the Nile, but like in that bottom half of Egypt. Okay. So I've seen all of these deeply associated with many of my clients. And like what's always really interesting is that a lot of times when I say this, these clients would be like you literally have no idea the relationship or the feelings, the emotions that I have towards snakes, you know, for the cobra goddess, or towards crocodiles, right? For Wadjet. It is fascinating. It's so interesting. Okay, so anyway, I've spoken a little bit about in pre-dynastic times, a lot of people had this magical power, right? This willful capacity to use their own intention, their own will, mixed with their own healing powers to influence the way that life went. The way that I view this, the way that I see this, is this red power. So it literally like, it shows itself to me as just like red light versus, I've seen blue light, which we'll talk about later. So actually I'll talk about that, right? There are two different types of power of magic that I've seen, depicted in Egyptian lifetimes. Red power is that magical willpower mixed with healing, and the blue, which is all that's able to be used, all that is allowed to be used later, so after sort of like the dynastic, like pharaoh sort of situation takes over, the blue power is pure healing. So while the magical power, the red magical power is, yeah, it's that more like alchemical magic will-based power. You can think of blue, like just for the sake of understanding it, as closer to Reiki, like Reiki being that pure healing light that's channeling through you. And of course, Reiki is its own tradition, and you know, I don't want to simplify it, but this is just for the sake of helping you to understand and to visualize what I'm saying. Now, it was the red power that was stamped out as soon or as these like pharaohs began to gain more and more power, the dynastic times begun. Why? Because it gave women willful power, right? A power that they weren't supposed to have, right? They were not kings, they were not part of the royalty. Yes, they were probably priestesses of some kind. Again, they're getting this power, they're receiving this power from some sort of deity, but it was embodied in a woman. And it was during this time that increasingly, women were viewed as lesser than men and should not have this power. They were untrustworthy, right? That was a huge thing that keeps coming up in the records, right? This projection upon womankind as untrustworthy. So they should not have this power. This red power was earth-based magic. It was stemming from the desert sand. I've seen it coming from there. It's coming from the mother goddess. It's coming from the very nourishment of the earth itself, and it could be wrathful, right? It could be protective, like the mother, protective, nourishing, healing, and punishing when it needs to be. Okay, so this, when the red power, I don't know how else to say it, the red light magic was really prevalent. This was well over 5,000 years ago. Ish. So again, from what I've seen, it's through the first dynasty, which was a period, now it's 3,100 to 2,900 years ago, not years ago, sorry, but like BC. This was when what I have sort of termed through my visions called like the rounding up of people who embodied and held onto this power. And of course, like the power, the willful power, transferred more and more to men, specifically to kings and like those wealthy, rich, royalty, etc. Okay, now what I refer to as the rounding up is that the king would have had literal armies, men, etc., who would go and like find anyone who was known to hold this gift, hold this power, and bring them to the king. If rounded up, you were given two choices. Kind of three. They were to die, right? So that was your first choice. You could be stripped of your gifts. This was a very, very painful, like, magical process. Or you were allowed to continue using your gifts, but for healing only, and only in service of the king. So the way that I've seen this is that, like, oftentimes, if you chose this option, like to keep your gifts, but to use it only for the king, you would be a healer on the slaves, for example. So, if the king had slaves and they were like obviously doing backbreaking work, they were not fed well, not really taken care of. It was a lot of it was like miserable work, depending on like which, like where you were, but anyway. So you would be allowed to use your healing only to only heal the physical wounds enough so these people could go about their work, right? So that they could get back on with it. So you couldn't do any like, well, you weren't supposed to, doesn't mean that I haven't seen clients who sort of went against this, but you weren't supposed to use your gifts to like heal their souls or anything like that. It was very much like physical healing. And so it's interesting, right, that in this transitional period, you can see that you are only allowed to use the healing powers and only in service of the king. And so I wonder if, like, the blue light that I eventually see that did actually, because that's like pure healing light and that traveled through a lot of ancient Egypt, like that was still being used, not all the way to like Hellenic or like Roman rule in Egypt, but sort of through most of the actual like Egyptian dynasties. And so it's almost like the magic or the willful, like earth-based magic was taken out. This is like one thing that I've sort of thought about. Again, this is like my own interpretation. But it was sort of like bred out. It's like if it's not being used, if it's only allowed to be used for healing and only in service to the king too, you would lose it. You would forget you had it over generations. Now, so if you were found out to be going against this, like if you were found to be using any of that like magical willful power, or if you were, found to be like doing anything more than like just physically healing the slaves or like the people that the king told you to heal, you would not be killed. So you would not be given another choice. You would be used. And so I've not seen this happen to anyone, but I've had clients who knew the risk and it like terrified them. And this is how I essentially perceive it, is that, okay, so you've had the choice. You can either die, be stripped of your gifts, or use your powers for healing only. Then if you're found to be like breaking the rules, you do not get a choice. You do not get the choice to either die or be used. You only get to be used. And being used meant that you would essentially be doing the king's will using your magical red willful power. So that would have been some really evil stuff that you were asked to do. And it would have left a really, really, really deep, strong, painful scar on the soul. So I can imagine a lot of people who are kind of like have that fear. And again, I'm just assuming, I've not seen an actual client who ended up with this, but I can imagine you know, for some people who have this really deep fear of their gifts, it could be that they're actually scared of it being manipulated, right? That they have like a past life wound, that something like this, that they were used for evil, right? But they literally had no choice. Again, they didn't even have the choice to die. It was like you were kept alive to be used to exert the king's evil, like more punishing, torturous will, from what I understand. So it's super interesting, right? Okay. So I want to zoom forward a tiny bit and then I'll share like I said, like my specific life that I have seen for myself. So in later dynasties, there is this, and this is kind of what I was talking about before, like in later dynasties, there's this very powerful blue magic, right? More the blue light. So this is like, again, I see it as this like, it's just like the same as the red light, but it's just a different color. From what I understand, it's much more like sky magic, or like angelic healing magic than earth magic, right? Again, this like red power was very like earth-based, goddess, like mother goddess, etc. This is like pure, powerful, healing blue light, but the capacity to manifest your will with it has been stripped away. It's purely healing. There's no actual like power to create change in there. This is where I find it's really interesting. You know, if we think about where we are at currently, collectively, we have been stripped of our belief, our capacity to, our belief that we have any capacity to influence the way that life plays out. The way that, like, who's in power, right? Even a lot of the work that we do is more or less, it's like we're more or less trying to heal the damage that is being done by the system, by who's in power, but we also feel basically powerless to actually change who's in power. And this has been going on for a very, very, very long time. This is not new. And this is something that I think is very interesting since I've been working with the records, and seeing it from, again, multiple different perspectives and, like, also multiple different parts of the world too, is that, yeah, we have had stripped from us our belief that we have the power to exert will. But as I'm going to talk about in a minute, we might surprise ourselves. Okay, so quickly before I go into that, I want to talk about mine. So like I said, I had a little look. I just asked to see to view my most relevant previous lifetime in ancient Egypt. Now, in this vision, I saw myself, like, burying scrolls. Obviously I could not read what was written on the scrolls, but I did get the sense that they weren't, like, the Book of the Dead, like, the scrolls that were buried with the dead, of Egypt. I feel like it was something different. It was written in hieroglyphs. Again, like I said, I was connected to the vulture goddess. And it's really interesting. I very rarely, like, hear the actual physical place name or city name. I'll usually get, like, an idea of where I am in the world, and then through, like, Googling, again, to try and, like, narrow things down based on the information that I've seen and, like, the nature that I've seen and what's going on and all of that, and the symbology, I'll be able to get a pretty good idea of at least, like, what basic part of the world I'm in. But I heard the actual, like, title, Komombo. Komombo. K-O-M-O-M-B-O. And of course, because I have never heard of this place in my life, and it sort of came to me more as just like Komombo, like, you know, something. And again, it was just through Googling and, like, searching for any ancient Egyptian cities that had the name C-O-M I was looking for, but turns out it's K-O-M, that I was able to find this. And be like, oh my god, it's a real place. But anyway, so when I googled Komombo to do some more research into it, again, I've never heard of this word before, I've never heard of this place before. It is a temple, or there's a temple there that is connected to worshipping both Horus, the falcon god, who you may remember, like the cult of Horus merged with worship of the vulture goddess. And like this temple, it is like, from what I could read, Egypt's only jewel temple, so it has multiple, like, patron gods or goddesses, because it was connected to, yes, Horus, but also Sobek, which is the crocodile god that I spoke about. And in that, you know, so how people experience Komombo, who've been lucky to travel there, as a temple that explores duality, like, it explores the shadow and the light. And this can be shown in how it's actually built. It's like, obviously, like, because of how it's angled, like how the temple is angled and all of that, you get to, like, one side is just like fully submerged in light. It's like there's no escaping the light. And then the other side is like, it's all shadow, you know? But anyway, there was more. It's really, really interesting. So if you want to look it up, definitely recommend it for a little deep dive. Komombo temple. And there was one other thing that was interesting too. Oh my god, yeah, this was just like a funny little thing. sorry. was that one thing that I saw also in this lifetime was that I was married to a brother. And if you think that you are so far above it that you've never been married to a sibling or a cousin or whatever in any past lifetime, my friend, you are wrong, okay? So let's just not sugarcoat the past. But anyway, so this brother husband was a really funny character, and I did actually, like, notice or realize that this was someone that I have dated in this lifetime, which makes me laugh so much because their characters are so similar. But this person, like this brother husband, was essentially trying to corrupt me. And like, he'd sort of hacked the system. Like, he wasn't like actually evil or anything like that, but he was like doing bad things, because he knew he could get away with it, more or less. Like, there was like a cheekiness, but also like undertones of evil, right? But anyway, It's how I interpreted this. Again, I find it the most difficult to read my own records and, like, understand exactly what's going on, because it's, like, it's your perspective, right? And, it, like, it's difficult to get out of your own way. But how I interpret it was potentially, like, these scrolls that I was burying was because at the period I saw, it was very much, like, getting closer to, like, the Hellenic period and even, like, Roman period, I believe. And it was, like, these scrolls were buried next to where there is now this temple. But it's almost, like, remembering the vulture goddess and, like, her ways at the time when she was, like, fully being merged or fully lost to the, like, merging with Horus. Again, I could be totally wrong, but it seemed like the gods were important in this. And this is something that, you know, again, like, what have humans ever done? We've tried to make sense of the universe, and we've often done that through deifying, like, things, people, energies, etc. And so within worship of various deities, you will find the secrets to the universe. Like, it is just literally that simple. And it's not going to be like the secrets to the universe. It's going to be the secrets to the universe as interpreted by a specific culture or a specific, like, time period or group of people. And so, yeah, that's why, like, mythology, studying mythology is so fascinating. And, like, not just studying it from, like, a modern interpretation, which is also interesting, but from an ancient interpretation, because then you can understand how the ancients, like, actually viewed the world, viewed the universe, all of that. Okay, anyway, so bless my brother husband, and yes, anyway, all right, so I said I want to talk a little bit. All right, so I'm not going to go into too many specifics here, but one thing that another, like, theme that I've seen a lot, and this is, like, in multiple different parts of the world, but a lot of the lifetimes that I've seen in are, like, taking place in Europe, and in these more, like, kind of Celtic pagan traditions, practices, using their gods, etc., as well as, like, the Greek gods and goddesses. But they are rituals and magic that are used to change the course of history, to dethrone and kill leaders and kings. So, yeah, again, this is a theme that comes up a lot. And I feel like that's just because of, again, just the people who gravitate towards my work are going to have these very similar stories, very similar wounds, memories, past life experiences, and patterns. And obviously, because I'm someone who wants to bring down the system, it makes sense that I would attract people who've also had this history of trying to break down the system. And it's also because it like completely goes against what they were trying to hammer into us during this ancient Egyptian period of all you can do is heal. You cannot change the course of history. You can just, like, heal from the damage we commit. But this knowing of the capacity to actually change the outcome, and change politics just via magic and via will has always been there. It's not gone away. And you can, like, it's so fascinating when you look into various, like, histories, but there was, I believe it was in England. Yeah, there's been one in England. I feel like there's been one in Spain too, maybe 500 years earlier. But just, like, groups of witches, magicians, whatever they would have called themselves at the time, getting together and doing various rituals to, like, basically stop their countries from being invaded and them working. I think I've spoken on here before about, like ancient Jewish death curse, essentially, that's been used against prime ministers, and it's worked. That prime minister has a week later fallen into a vegetative state. Again, I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't know. I feel like, yeah, sometimes I've even had messages from my guides, like, what we've shown you, you cannot share just because it can be dangerous. But anyway, yes. So I have seen multiple rituals being done, by my clients and people they, like, worked with in this sort of magical sense. These are not pretty rituals, I will say. There is often sacrifice, and sometimes self-sacrifice, sometimes blood sacrifice, etc. But it is fascinating because you can usually know it works. Like, I'll usually get that information, like, yes. So yes, I think I just wanted to put that in there, because, you know, if we feel like we are powerless, it's only because we've had that sort of trained into us across multiple generations, but we are absolutely not. And when you start, and like, this is something that I have spoken about a little, like, when you start playing with magic, you almost like take on a new responsibility because you do have this power to use your will to exert change. You can do that to, like, change the course of history for better, let's just say. And I'll leave that with you. But yes, I have seen it. It has been happening over, like, thousands of years, witches, magicians, all of that have been doing this. And again, it's, like, a lot of the times you had to do this in secret, because if you were found out, you would not be killed, you would be used. And the using, again, that is also something that has come up over millennia, right? The if you're found to have these skills, these gifts, these powers, whatever you want to refer to it as, this inner knowing of how to use your will for like changing the course of history, and like the wrong person was to find that out, that would be used for evil, more or less, and that's really painful. Okay. What else did I have in my notes? We've nearly been speaking for an hour, so maybe we'll have to do, a part two, or if there's, like, anything specifically you'd like me to talk about, like, what else I've seen, experienced, and so on, because there's so much. I mean, one thing that's, like, really interesting that I won't have time to go into too much is that, like, obviously I've always had the sort of, like, sense that Atlantis and these, like, ancient, places that are spoken about are real, but actually seeing that again in multiple clients' memory banks is really interesting, and almost like, yeah, seeing a cohesive story come together of what exactly happened and comparing that to other people's experiences of like what they've seen in like hypnosis and also through like the Akashic records and things like that. It's wild to be able to like marry all these pieces together and like see it for myself, like not just like have it told, but actually see like, okay, no, I'm backing this up. Okay. I don't know. Yeah, we might leave it there. We've gone into a bit and, you know, for whatever reason, we ended up speaking about Egypt for a long time. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm sending you guys lots of love. For the sake of my voice, I better stop here. But as always, all the ways to work with me will be listed below if you're curious about past lives. If this has piqued your interest, obviously I'd love to look into your records for you. So that's all just available in the links below. I also have like healing packages. So if you want to do more than just like a one-time look into past lives and things like that, you can book an actual healing package where you'll get like 6 like Akashic records readings where we'll look into all this stuff. We'll look into your soul's journey across lifetimes. Why do you have this experience now? Why do you have this weird relationship with this person now? But it's also interspersed with mentoring sessions. So like we'll come together and we'll discuss what came up, and we'll also look at your life, and we'll like actually make plans to change it rather than just like you getting the information and then dealing it with yourself. So there's that, there's just like, yeah, regular Akashic records readings, etc. But anyway, I'm sure I'll talk to you soon, sending you so much love, and talk to you in 2 weeks.